Hello everyone, this is Dark Journalist. Tonight I have a special interview for you as documentary filmmaker and investigative reporter Millie Weaver of Millennial Millie returns to the show and goes deep on the deep state showdown. Millie will look at how the Mar-a-Lago raid, illegal surveillance, the presidential election, predictive programming, the central bank digital currency, and the push for CIA disclosure of the UFO file are all somehow related to the dramatic period of the brave new world we find ourselves in, and where it's all really leading. Please join us now. Millie, it's great to have you back. Now, let's start off with the perception management that the media is doing right now.
Right. So they want so badly to create a right-wing extremism problem in America. And the problem is that the people are just not playing the part well enough.
Right.
They're not falling for it enough. There's been too many people pointing things out. Mm-hmm. And so the problem is how do we get more people to go and do risky things that aren't that smart for the movement and the group? Well, you have to incite them. And how do you do that? You have to create like an emotional trigger point event. And that would be like the arrest of their president.
Yes.
And that's what they're going for. They want to arrest him. And this isn't about Trump's going to be hung or Trump's going to be going to jail for the rest of his life. We don't even know if that's the case. What it's about is inciting radicalism so that when they do that, just like how they did the raid with the FBI, right, on Mar-a-Lago, or Mar-a-Lago, right? The point was is right after that, the FBI was monitoring all the online social media activity.
Interesting.
So they were collecting people, monitoring, spying, so that then they can say, look, there's a radical right-wing extremism problem. Because
they wanted that instant feedback. It's like a trial balloon.
Exactly.
Do you, Mar-a-Lago is very unusual. It's still not very well explained, even as it is. And the nature of the documents that were taken out of Mar-a-Lago are still completely unknown, except that they were classified at the highest level. The majority of them were, supposedly. And Trump, you know, the things that he's let out about it was, oh, it's a good thing I declassified them, and I can't believe they did this, which is, it is unprecedented to raid a sitting, you know, ex-president. I mean, it doesn't happen. And, you know, they've had cases with Nixon and Clinton and Reagan who were in, you know, with Iran-Contra and the Lewinsky thing with Clinton and Nixon with Watergate. They were all in very, very deep hot water and never got raided. So this is a whole different level that we're on now on the partisanship. This is the deep state versus the political process.
Yes. And this is the weaponization of the justice system against political dissidents, against their political opponents. And so there's that aspect, but then there's also the aspect of, you know, from what I've heard, I have a very verifiable source who actually worked for Reagan's Star Wars program, like helped create it.
And oh, wow.
So this person has a lot of background in space programs. And so what they had said to me was that there was concern about what they had heard originally was that there was concern that Trump had taken the biscuit, which I don't know what that means, but it's like code word for something. And it pertaining to nuclear codes or something of that sort, but also that there was some kind of documents pertaining to Space Force and certain space programs. So there was that I had gotten from that source. So we'll see if anything pans out. But at the end of the day, I think we're really not going to fully know until that all becomes disclosed as to what they had. But obviously, we're not going to, if stuff was classified, we're not going to know. And the bottom line is that they're trying to go after President Trump on something where he can actually, when he was president, he could choose to declassify documents. And that's apparently what he had done. And so what they're now trying to do is they're trying to say, well, he couldn't do that. They're trying to not acknowledge his declassification of certain documents. Okay?
So, yes.
Right. They're trying to get him on technicalities. And in most instances, they did this raid in a situation where any other former president, any other official, if they had retained classified documents or anything of the sort, they would just usually handle it via mail or email and say, hey, you need to get those to us. And people would just comply and then all would be handled. And apparently Trump was complying. His people were complying with them. But see, that didn't matter anyway, because this is about a political witch hunt. This is about a political persecution. And they want any reason to try to demonize him ahead of the midterm so that they can demonize also the people that he was pushing and promoting.
Are your sources, you have great sources, by the way, some of the best, but are your sources giving you information now that they plan to indict Trump as a prelude to putting him on trial and trying to put him in prison?
Yes. You know, Trump's people, very close, verifiable, you know, said that the whole point is they are trying to take him out in any way they can. And so it's very real, very likely that we could actually see a case in the D.C. district courts where Trump is literally being put on trial. And
incredible.
Try to try him for treason, which, you know, is a death penalty type charge.
Amazing.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
That we could actually see something along those lines. And imagine how incited the grassroots conservatives will be if they're literally pushing things along that line. If they decide to push that pressure, pressurize the people, how are the people going to react and respond? Like I said, I just from what I've seen, the evidence I have, they do not have enough evidence for a conviction. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I have not seen enough to think that Trump would be actually in any threat of being charged other than, like, not charged, but convicted, other than the fact that these courts are extremely corrupt, the fact that our own military-industrial complex has software and software capabilities where they can, and they've been doing this, they can literally use predictive algorithms and analysis in order to predict which person in a jury pool is likely to vote a certain way.
Oh, wow. Right?
So they actually have these systems where it's like, let's see which outcome we want. And they use all of our data from our cell phones, our social media posts, everything. Okay. And they can predictively analyze which jury pool will give you within a certain statistical anomaly what result you want. Right?
Wow. Yeah.
So that's the concern. And also, it's a heavily blue Democrat area. So it's not going to be hard for them to do that. So that's the main concern, is that will he actually get a fair trial? Right? Do they want to really incite the people? I really personally think that they're kind of playing it by ear right now. Mm-hmm. With the midterms.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, they did the January 6th clown show hearings with the J6 Select Committee, right? And that bombed terribly. Their ratings were so low.
Right. And
it was so bad. They could get...
Yeah.
It was bad.
They tried to turn it into like American Idol or with Liz Cheney. It was really horrible.
Exactly. It was so bad. And, you know, Liz Cheney lost her reelection campaign. Because
right. And by no small margin either. Yeah.
Right. So they see that and they're like, okay, well, hold on, pump the brakes. Right. So although I think the initial plan was to have done it before, I think that now they're kind of, you know, walking that back. And I think they're going to wait till after the midterms, possibly. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. if you, just from my own political analysis, I think that. If they do it before the midterms, I think judging by how everything has gone politically and how fast Liz Cheney lost her seat and how most American people are sick and tired of the J6 stuff, mm-hmm. I think that it's going to ruin their election chances. So I don't know. I do know that they do a lot of meddling, right?
In the elections, sure.
But the bottom line is at the end of the day, if you overwhelm it, if you flood it, there's really not much they can do about it. So
absolutely,
that's the worry.
Do you when you look at this and you look at Trump and his viability as a candidate for 2024, with all the things they have going on, of course, there's the Georgia legal case, which is a different thing about vote rigging in Georgia. And then there's the New York Attorney General suing the Trump Organization. So there's this sprawl of cases in addition to the Mar-a-Lago, which is the main kind of federal case. But how viable is Trump with all these headwinds against him? Have they made it so that he doesn't have the ability to be freed up enough to actually run for president in 24, just based on what you are feeling out there with the voters?
You know, it's a tricky one. I think it's actually going to be a lot more of an uphill battle for them to actually really nail him on anything or get him so tied up where he can't run.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think that's their goal. But at the same time, Trump has a lot of lawyers. He has, at the end of the day, he has rights. He's an American citizen, right? So mm-hmm. they have to be able to justify removing his rights. And he has that right to run for president, for the presidency. And he's got a lot of supporters and a big base. So you can't just strip someone of something in broad daylight in front of everyone and think that's going to stand. So mm-hmm. the problem is they're in a struggle because they know that if Trump runs in 2024, he's going to be the biggest threat to them. They know that the people he's been backing, these Republican candidates, have actually been faring very well. And they actually bet against him largely in the midterms. Originally, did you know that the Democrats were, some of these Democrat organizations were actually funding and actually supporting some of the Trump-backed candidates in the primaries when the Republicans were running?
Yes. Yeah. Now, what's going on with that?
Yeah, they originally bet. This was the gamble, which it was a really stupid bet, okay? The gamble was, let's actually bet on the people that Trump are endorsing, because mm-hmm. after we annihilate him with the January 6th Select Committee hearings,
they'll all be tainted.
They'll all be tainted.
Yeah.
And so it was a big bet, and they lost because the American people were not falling for the clown show. And so it just ended up backfiring majorly because his candidates that he's been backing have been doing really well in their races. And the candidates coming up in this midterm election are expected to do very well as well. So they messed up big time there. And so it actually kind of, I don't know. It was a bad bet and they lost it. So now we're actually going to be seeing a large wave of Trump-endorsed, Trump-backed candidates. And we're going to see more people getting rid of the rhinos and getting these patriotic American candidates in office. So, you know, it's a good thing. It ended up being a win.
So you think that we could roll into November and like people like Carrie Lake, for example, may pull out a huge governorship in Arizona. There's all kinds of Senate races that are going to go Republican. Do you think that the November election is going to see the Republicans take over both houses of Congress?
Well,
now, what do you think the odds are?
Right. It's interesting because there's different sources, different things. I'll tell you what one source in intelligence has said, which this was like months ago, but basically that it was already negotiated amongst the Senate and the Congress that the Democrats were going to get the Senate and the Republicans were going to get the House. But see, you can say that, and that's what the establishment might have agreed to, mm-hmm. but we don't know if that's what's going to happen, right?
Right.
That's what their plan was. And see, so my concern was, okay, if that's their plan, then what could they do in order to further push their agenda along so that this doesn't estopple their agenda, but allows it to continue moving forward? And so what I thought was, okay, what if they pass in the House right before the election, pass a bunch of crazy bills, like really radical bills that the Republicans would probably have blockaded, and then they move that and then right before election, and then election happens and they take the Senate, and then they catch them on the other side and move them up through. I mean, who knows what level of strategy they're working with here.
Interesting point. Yeah.
Right. But at the same time, what I think personally, just from what I've seen, is that there's a possibility that we might see a red wave, because a big red wave. But the problem is we know that there's a lot of funny business going on, right? So we don't know to what level that's going to be softened or dampened. And the problem is they use predictive programs where they can predictively analyze who's likely to show up, who's not, who's going to vote which way. I mean, I don't think that the American population fully understands how bad the surveillance is and how much it's being utilized against them in many ways. It's bad. Okay. I mean, a lot of Americans just have these in-home devices like Alexa and whatever, right?
Right.
And talking to them or talking in front of them all day, every day. Or they have their phones in front of them. And then their phones will just randomly turn on and be like, hello, what can I do for you, right? It's listening 24/7. Like these devices are listening and they're actually transcribing what you're saying. And it's all being logged. The data is all being logged and it's being predictively analyzed. And they're selling it to third-party think tanks and big companies so that they can better analyze the American population and what issues to push on, how to sway elections, essentially by engaging in psychological warfare operations on the American people in the name of campaigning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a problem. Definitely.
Absolutely. And you've done a lot of research around this. You've done documentaries, of course, and we've covered those. And that's extraordinary work. At what level do you see 2022 is kind of like the next level of this? Because it kicked into high gear in 2016 with that election. And also some of the candidates from that period, like Hillary Clinton, are coming back around and everyone's saying, well, she's going to run in 2024, which seems extraordinary because she'd be 77 years old. I mean, I guess Biden's 80, so it wouldn't be too far out. But these are some older, I mean, we never had old presidents like this. Reagan was about as old as we got, and he only was in his like 73. So, you know, what do you think about, are they pulling out the 2016 thing that they lost and lost control? And would they run Hillary Clinton?
They could have a sock puppet up there. And as long as the American people are okay with it, then so be it. I mean, it doesn't matter because these are puppets. Okay. Mm-hmm. You think Biden's the one pulling any strings? I mean, come on. The guy's walking around looking like he's wearing Depends, hopefully, right? And he doesn't know what he's saying half the time. He can't finish his sentence. He's on one track and then he's on the other track. And I mean, clearly the guy has dementia. Clearly. I mean, they give him cue cards where he reads off step by step what to do. Shake this person's hand. Ask this person that. I mean, it's bad. So does it matter if they have Hillary Clinton? She could be rolled up there in a wheelchair or walking with a cane, spouting gibberish. Right. And it wouldn't matter because at the end of the day, the administration, the operatives, the assets, they're the ones who are the ones pulling the strings. Okay, they're pushing the bills. They're pushing for the policies. The executive orders are being written by. You think Biden's writing the executive orders? No. Okay. It's the apparatus around him. He's just the puppet figure. He's the guy who they prop up on a stage and say, oh, how well are the, let's look at the analytics to see how the American people are viewing him. Do they like that he said, howdy, y'all? Like, I mean, it's that gimmicky. It's that cheesy. It's like, go watch that movie, Wag the Dog, and you'll get some kind of perspective
right.
on how bad it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've seen so much of this has been cooked and you know, we had Biden out there looking for a congresswoman who was deceased, right? And they had the PR person saying, oh, well, she was top of mind. And they kept just repeating top of mind, like it was some kind of phrase, like an MK Ultra phrase to get you into a mode where you just forget about what actually happened. When you look out at this, though, it's true. That puppet thing is actually very true. But one of the things that's gone on with the Biden administration is they got us involved in this Ukraine-Russian war. And to the extent and the level, $80 billion so far of support and activity. And now there's all this talk about nuclear exchange, and the Biden administration has ordered all these radioactive, sort of prevention pills. So there's all this weirdness going on in the background. What's going on there in relation to the Biden administration? And, you know, so it is the neocons running the American empire right through into a Russian World War III style scenario. Is that what we're looking at?
Right. Well, what I'll say first before I get into this is, from what I've heard, there's a lot of talk about it being Michelle Obama, though. So
interesting. Okay.
Definitely want.
She has a new book.
Right. They're really positioning her, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
So that's very possible. Now, as far as like the war with Russia and Ukraine, this has a lot to do with the pipelines. Okay. That's why we just recently saw Nord Stream pipelines being sabotaged, essentially.
Right.
This is a war over the gas. And the problem is that you have Germany, you have Europe, who's very, very heavily dependent on Russian gas for their power. Okay. A large percentage of their energy comes directly from that Russian gas through the pipelines, and it comes through Ukraine. So Ukraine is used to getting a large amount of money in by charging a fee for it coming through their state. And so what's going on here is you have the West battling for Ukraine and you have Russia battling for Ukraine. Russia's very nervous about the West taking over Ukraine for multiple reasons. I can name a couple being, why would they want people who could potentially be their enemies right up on them? It's like with us, what would we want Russia right on, you know, in Cuba? Right next door?
No. It is.
It makes it harder for protecting our country, right? It makes it harder if somebody were to launch nukes or launch missiles, you have less time to respond.
Exactly.
Next is the, like I said, fighting over the resource. Russia is heavily dependent on the money from Europe and the money from the West. So the Russian economy relies a lot on that financially, and it could cripple Russia's economy to have that interfered with. So the big problem here with Ukraine is they're in the middle of this pipeline. And so now Russia has been getting its butt handed to it in Ukraine. So Russia's in a very desperate situation, almost like backing a wild animal into a corner. And then here you have the Nord Stream pipelines 1 and 2 being sabotaged. And that was Russia's way of going around Ukraine and going directly through the sea down to Germany to supply gas to Germany. So now that they've sabotaged that, which it could take them quite a while to fix, we don't know how long that's going to take, Russia's going to be even more hostile in wanting to maintain their presence in Ukraine. So things are ramping up, definitely escalating. I think if anyone had a motive to have sabotaged the Nord Stream pipelines, it was definitely Ukraine, definitely the US. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's ugly. And I know that Putin's been threatening nuclear war. He's been very adamant that this is not a bluff. So take that as you will, but at the same time, Europe thinks that it is a bluff in a way because they know Putin's very dependent on them for money. And so there's that relationship. They, like I said, the problem is they've created a very dependent relationship, Russia and Europe.
Excellent point. The idea also that he would sabotage his own pipelines makes no sense at all. And I knew that the next day when they had the former CIA directors out there, like Brennan was one of them, and he came out and said, I know, you know, who did the Russia hack, you know, of those pipelines and destroyed them. It was Russia. And I was like, that, you know, where are you getting that from? Why? Mr. MSNBC.
Russia could literally just turn off the valve.
Good
they
point.
They need to sabotage their pipelines.
Yeah.
The gas flows from Russia to Germany. Mm-hmm. If they wanted it to stop, they would just turn the valve off. Why would they need to sabotage it?
But where are they heading then with this process? Like, for example, it escalates. And you're right, it is surprising that Russia's sort of facing some losses on the battlefield. I mean, we get a lot of propaganda coming out of that side of the world. So I don't know how much of that is even true. But let's say that it is true. And you have Zelensky saying, you know what, I think before the Russians use nukes, he came out and made a statement today that we should preemptively take out their ability to do so. And he said, don't wait until they do it and then call them out, but preemptively take out their ability to launch nukes, which is ridiculous and puts us into World War III style footing. We're coming up on the Cuban Missile Crisis 60th anniversary here. We had the same thing, like you just mentioned, Cuba and the Russians placing the missiles in Cuba and us having the blockade and Kennedy managing that whole situation. But, you know, the idea that we'd be in this situation 60 years later and over Ukraine just seems so far flung. So is this just an incredible, you know, gaffe of bad policy on the foreign policy side by Biden? Or is this a plan to engage, you know, as we've seen, the Biden administration has run out nuclear PSAs and things. Do they want a nuclear exchange? I mean, is that the ultimate excuse for them to go into authoritarian mode here in the U.S.?
Really, the U.S. has very little business to be involving itself in a proxy war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
It doesn't benefit our country. We don't have much business doing that other than claiming that we are some kind of moral, you know, moral virtue signalers that want to go and you're
interested absolutely. Ourselves.
In
yeah.
culture, we don't really quite fully understand. I mean, Ukraine used to be part of the Soviet Empire. So in a lot of ways, Russia almost feels like that's part of their territory and part of their land. So, I mean, it's something that actually involves a lot of diplomacy when dealing with, and I think Biden doesn't have much diplomacy, but I also think that Biden, look at his dealings in Ukraine, right, with Hunter Biden, and the problem is that who knows what Ukraine has over them, right? I mean, we don't know if the Bidens are being coerced or extorted or have some kind of a financial incentive to be being involved.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right. So there could be that. And it could also just be that this is a larger globalist plan to get the world involved in a world war to further depopulate.
Interesting.
As a very high priority agenda amongst the elites. Very high priority.
Right. Well, and they've had so many ops relating to it, and they're actually getting their wish because so much of the population's going down. And the whole idea about getting rid of the middle class in America is a piece of that also, because you're getting rid of your competition there. One of the things that I've been noticing, and I wanted to get see what you think of this, which is Glenn Greenwald came out and made a statement in relation to what was going on at the end of the Trump administration, and that Trump was looking seriously at pardoning both Assange and Snowden, more so Snowden. And we know that Assange actually was an incredible benefit to Trump's 2016 campaign, releasing weekly Hillary's emails. That pummeled her in a lot of quarters. And, you know, they got the idea, oh, this person is corrupt after all. And I do think that we kind of let, you know, Assange hang out to dry and then Pompeo's CIA grabs him. One of the things that Greenwald said was that at the end of that administration, they were trying to, on the Republican Senate side, blackmail Trump into not doing those things by saying, we'll vote with the Democrats on your impeachment if you do it. and that some of the documents that he ended up taking related to sensitive activities around the CIA that showed how they had colluded with the FBI to create the Russian collusion scandal, but scandals as far back as the assassination of President Kennedy. When you get around this Mar-a-Lago piece and the National Archives and, you know, the kind of lightweight nature of how the case would ordinarily be into what they're turning it into, what do you think of Greenwald's sort of, you know, saying out there in public, hey, you know, this is basically related to the fact that the Mar-a-Lago raid was related directly to this idea that he had taken these documents as a kind of retaliatory thing, like, I'm going to hold these just in case you guys decide to act against me as an ex-president.
I mean, it's possible. The things that are going on right now politically are just next level. I mean, it's
yes. Just,
you would never yeah. think... You know, the American people get a very dumbed down version of what actually goes on behind the scenes. There's a lot of really crazy stuff that goes on behind the scenes politically. And so, I don't know. I mean, it's possible that that's a motive, but I don't know. I don't have any firsthand knowledge that, you know, it could have been something where he was trying to maintain something to then later put out there. I've heard that. I've also heard that maybe he took something pertaining to elections or pertaining to that they were spying on him during his campaign in 2016, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like I said, it's classified. So we're not going to fully know. They might generalize and tell us, oh, this is what was there. This what was what we found. But at the same time, I mean, look at what they redacted all throughout the released warrant that they put out there, right?
Oh, yeah. So
it's just, they're not going to really tell us at the end of the day what's really going on, if that makes any sense. So we have to just kind of wonder. We have to talk to other sources high up, like intelligence sources, and that's the best we can kind of get out of it. But I think at the end of the day, they're just trying to take him out. And, you know, we know with Hillary Clinton, her email, her private server, these type of things happen, and even worse, right, with people on their side, and no one ever gets in trouble. They're immune. It's like there's a criminal cabal, criminal family, which that's a lot of times what I refer to as deep state, that has a lot of power and influence, and they are essentially the ones who are running things behind the scenes for the high up elites, which you don't even know their names, okay? Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about like BlackRock, we're talking about all these large hedge funds with literally billionaires and practically trillionaires that literally run the world, okay? There's families that essentially have so much overwhelming power, right? And we're looking at Hillary Clinton, the Bidens, the Obamas, right? We're looking at James Comey and, you know, the corrupt DOJ. But at the end of the day, who are they serving? Are they serving right. the American people? Or are they serving these other interests who have so much money that they can freely throw around, so much money that they can literally have the FBI's indulgence squad go and collect exorbitant amounts of blackmail on everyone so that they can keep men of power and influence under their control. So it's going to take a lot of people waking up to this and a lot of people seeing what's really going on in order for us to actually fix and address any of it. And that's why I think that President Trump has done a great service to the American people, if anything, just by pointing out the corruption in the media and some of the corruption going on. And we would have never seen it had he not ran and essentially been a candidate that got past all of their glass windows or glass ceilings, mm-hmm. right? And partially because he's a billionaire, he could really kind of self-fund in a lot of ways.
Right. And that's crucial.
Yeah. So
absolutely fascinating. Yeah. Well, when you talk, and I'm glad you bring up the predictive analytics part of this as well, because my question on this would be, what are their predictive analytics telling them about the possibility of fomenting a civil war style environment by 2024? So there is no election.
I actually have heard that back in 2012 by literal Hollywood Illuminati people, that was the plan, was to create a civil war in America and to shut everything off, to let the people starve and to essentially depopulate. And that's been their plan. And I think that, you know, it's hard to believe, like, many people are, for the longest time, they're just, and this is what I thought as well, is that it's just pure evil and that these people are doing this because they're evil and they just want to kill people. And only later to kind of better realize why they're doing it and how they are. Because, look, if it was just an evil plot, like from evil villain, which we know it's evil, but if it was just like, wahaha, we're going to kill everyone, and that's the way they were selling it amongst each other,
yeah,
I don't think you would get too many people to go along with it. But see, what's more sinister is the way that they're selling it amongst the elites, right? And amongst other world leaderships, is they're saying it like this. They're saying it like climate change. They're saying it like, oh, the world is running out of resources. The world is running out of water. Pretty soon, we're not going to have enough drinkable, clean water. We're not going to have enough resources to be able to sustain the people on Earth and the human populations. If we don't start rapidly decreasing the entire world population, the global population, people are going to be starving to death in the millions. And we're going to be seeing, and instead of people having a short end of their life, they're going to be just having to go through the long, drawn out, painful, agonizing death of starvation. So we're going to humanely euthanize people, and they're going to consent to it because they're all going to go run and get in line. Does that make any sense to you?
So that's, wow.
Yeah. The ideology here is
incredible.
Doing it to save the planet. And that's why you have people like Klaus Schwab and all these world leaders, and it's all about climate, this, get together. We have the Paris Climate Accord. We have to have, you know, the whole world coming together for climate.
Right.
Yeah. So that's how
volunteer. Yeah, this is it. They want you to volunteer for your own suicide. It makes it easier for them.
Right. But see, they're like, we're the world leaders. And if we don't, you know, administer this, and if we don't, you know, handle things, who would? Right. And so it's a very elitist mindset where they think they're superior. They think they're smarter. They look down on low IQ people. They think people are useless eaters and they want to get rid of them. And notice you have like now King Charles or whatever, right? Elizabeth's new, her son who's now taken over, right? They talk about depopulation. They talk about climate change. He's known as like the climate king, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's very pro climate change prevention or climate change activism. I mean, these are the same royal families that have said that, you know, you wish you could die and come back as a virus to be a pandemic and wipe people out.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the kind of groupthink that they have at that level. And the World Economic Forum, a lot of that, you know, they've enlisted the Bill Gates, Bono, all these types of people to spread this idea that it's all about the climate. What's interesting to me is I think it's all right to look at the environmental questions and say this, you know, on the alternative side, we don't have to say everything about the climate is an op, because I believe that these corporations have damaged the environment. And I think nuclear tests have damaged the environment. But I think if they have, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars on their balance sheet that they haven't even reinvested, that they should be the ones to pay for the cleanup of all that stuff, and that the citizens should demand that. So I don't even have an aversion to talking about the environment. If they want a really good environmental talk, you know, if Lloyd Blankfein wants to talk about how he can save Patagonia, great. You know what? Bill Gates can take half of his fortune and probably not even miss it and invest in technologies that would save the environment, you know, and those guys can foot the bill for it instead of channeling down a carbon tax on people who are already stressed out in relation to inflation and all the things and the stoppages that you're talking about. So in a way, it's almost like that conversation needs to be turned around, because what they have right now is that thing where they're saying, oh, to be responsible, you have to do this. We're the responsible ones. Well, fine. I mean, if they have the accumulated wealth of, you know, the world, basically at the top 1%, then they'd be the ones who you'd go to fund cleaning up the environment. So it's a weird mindset switch that they've played on us in relation to this.
Right. And, you know, there's a problem with the way that the green energy industry is currently right now, in that, you know, a lot of the solutions that these people present are actually false. They're not real solutions.
So, oh, right. Yeah.
Like the wind farms, for example, those are not viable sources of energy. You could never power the entire United States on wind energy. It's right. Literally impossible. So when you look at how these wind farms have to literally be powered by either gas generators or powered by coal plants to keep the blades turning, because if the blades don't turn, they warp. And if the blades warp, they're useless. Right.
Right.
So they can only collect the wind energy, for example, when the wind is blowing at a very constant rate. So not even those big bursts or spikes of gusts of wind count. That becomes dirty electricity, and they dump it, and they just count the carbon credits, and they essentially get that green subsidy money with it. But it was nothing.
Oh,
it
really
went into the dirt, okay? So the problem is they're pushing all of these green energy solutions, which are not really – they're not really valid options, because the way they're forming everything is they want everyone to be very dependent on one large power company that people have to pay money to for power. Mm-hmm. Now, if they actually did it on a way of where individually they just sold small home power kits, miniature small wind turbines on a roof, for example, solar panels on a roof, for example, right? You could do it in a way that way. But the way they're doing it with these large industrial wind farms and whatnot, it literally is useless. But the problem is okay, we don't want to give the people too much energy independence. That's a problem, right?
Yeah.
Because people, they have to keep everyone in this like slave mode. So we
continually
keep the cog going and the wheel going for their society and their system that they have. So I think there's been a lot of inventions. There's been so much technology out there that's literally been captured. They go buy up patents. They go capture this new technology. And it's literally, they've created like practically a museum of things that will never be.
Unbelievable, yes.
Have you heard of that before? Have you heard of the Museum of Things That Will Never Be? Like how they literally
have yes.
technology that is hidden away that they will never let out because it would actually create a society where they weren't dependent on the government and dependent on the elites?
Oh, there's no question. Well, the whole field around breakthrough energy, I mean, if we want to get into political intrigues around the deaths that we've had around certain families like the Clintons, for example, the death list around the breakthrough energy with the scientists is a mile long because they brought forward that technology. We've had it since Tesla, the ability to do it. And I think the problem is Tesla proposed, let's do it, you know, not wireless communications, but wireless beaming of energy. And at first they were like, oh, it's incredible. You can do that. And then they were like, well, wait a minute, that destroys our entire oil paradigm, forget it, and get rid of this guy. So, you know, we've had this backwards situation for over 100 years. So I guess one of the essential problems is that we've denied that that stuff exists. And so we're living in the kind of schizophrenic situation where it's like, oh, we're looking around for new energy sources when they've already held them and held them back, you know, through groups like the Central Intelligence Agency. So we have a little bit of a problem here with the wall of secrecy in relation to everyday life. But I guess my question for you about this is, when you look at the environmental question for real, doesn't it seem almost like an artificial thing where they say, well, climate, you know, let's use climate over and over again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are the same people talking about using mini nukes and things like right. that. But if we are in a climate crisis, wouldn't it be incumbent upon those companies themselves to do the cleanup? And I have no resistance, you know, as somebody in alternative media, to the idea that we have environmental problems. And I think we miss the boat a little bit because it gives them the ace card to constantly pull with, you know, the middle of the road citizen saying, well, we have to clean up the environment, so we have to do what we have to do. And, you know, those people will use the same techniques like lockdowns and all the rest of it. So I guess the question is, how do you get out of the mode of denying that there's an environmental problem, but also not give in to this kind of World Economic Forum vision about climate change?
Right. I think that the whole model where they're preaching about the dangers of cow farts, methane, or the dangers of CO2, for example, which CO2 is naturally existing in our environment and plants need CO2. So you just plant more plants, right? Plant more trees. There's solutions that we can come up with. But as far as like companies polluting, I would think that pollution should actually be an issue that conservatives really jump on board with combating. And the reason why I say pollution, I think we have to clarify we're directly talking about pollution. We're not talking about climate change because there's a lot of fraud in the climate change
science
out there. Yeah. Science. So if you talk about pollution, right? Absolutely. I mean, even look at the story with Aaron Brockovich with hex chromium 6 that they were putting in the water supply, which was giving cancer. You know, I actually had some of my family members actually lived in that small town near Barstow area, right? In California. And they actually drank water and lived near all that water. And so it does make you wonder when you've had like certain people on that side of the family have kids with leukemia or have other cancers that they've died from, if that was partially, you know, due to that. So to me, I think that that's a big issue. Companies, corporations dumping poisons and toxins into our water supply, into our environment. Absolutely. Those companies need to be stopped. They need to be punished. And I actually think that I know that companies, corporations, the way it's like it's set up, they have a lot of protection from liability. But I think that if those corporate CEOs and the corporate employees know that they are putting that into the environment, which will cause severe injury or death, they should be charged with murder. Okay, because that's what they're doing. Yeah. They're murdering people. Not only that, but in Ohio, the Teflon companies like 3M and others, they have been dumping for quite a while. They had been dumping poisonous toxic chemicals that were used to create Teflon.
Wow. Right,
into the Ohio River. And a bunch of people in the area were getting sick. And people who literally worked there at the plant, like pregnant women who they were saying it was perfectly fine to work around the chemicals with, their babies literally came out deformed. Okay.
Unbelievable.
And there are adults walking around us today that are completely disfigured and deformed because their parents were exposed to these chemicals or it was being dumped in the water supply in their area. So clearly there's a problem. Did you know that 3M and this Teflon chemical, I do not remember the name off the top of my head because it was pretty long, but you could look it up. All right. Teflon chemical that was being dumped into the Ohio River by this company out here was literally poisoning the population. There was a big lawsuit over it. They lost even, but they only had to pay a couple million dollars when they've made billions of dollars. And if you're using any of these pots and pans with Teflon on it, you're exposing yourself to this poisonous chemical. It's actually said that they've actually tested all the water, all the blood, like in the blood samples of humans now and all the water, everything, animals. It's been completely chemically it's been tainted by this chemical.
Oh, wow.
This chemical is present in everyone's blood. It's present in everyone's water, food, everything, because it has gotten so bad. And what they've actually done was they had to test in order to get samples to do studies, right? They couldn't find any groups of people that didn't have it in their system. So they actually had to go get military blood samples from like the 70s or 60s or something to even find blood that didn't have it in it.
Wow.
It's that bad. So I'm fully on board with you as far as we definitely should be addressing pollution. We're being they are polluting us, polluting our bodies, polluting our minds with chemicals, right? In the water supplies, which is fluoride, chlorine, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Mostly fluoride. That's the big one right there, which is it messes with your thyroid, messes with your pituitary gland. The chemicals on our food supply, the endocrine disruptors that they're spraying all over our crops and our food with pesticides, the heavy metals that they're literally poisoning our food supplies with, right?
Incredible.
You think you're being safe. You're like, oh, I'm just going to go eat the organic food at the store. You don't even know if those organic food brands are tainting their food with heavy metals. There have been lawsuits because some of these heavy metal, these food companies were putting heavy metals in baby food. Organic baby food was having high levels of heavy metals and organic baby formula. Okay. And we know that the heavy metals are linked with nerve damage. They're linked with autism, ADHD, ADD, all of that stuff. Tics, nervous tic disorders. It's bad. So we need to figure something out as a society as far as pollution. That's a major issue. Definitely.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. And so does it make you nervous when, we see guys like Jeff Bezos buying Whole Foods and automating the system? I mean, because it is, and Bill Gates, for example, buying the largest amount of farmland in the U.S. What does that tell you?
Well, one thing is Whole Foods is way overpriced, in my opinion, first of all.
Yeah.
That's what I will say. I will say it's way overpriced. Also, for some reason, I was shopping like only at Whole Foods when I was living in Austin. And I actually was like, oh, I actually could at that time in my life. But, and I was so sick all the time. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, I started wondering, I'm like, I'm trying to eat organic. I'm trying to eat healthy. Why am I sick? And I was feeding my son even the baby foods, organic baby foods and organic stuff, and come to find out later, they had came out and said that those baby foods had heavy metals in them.
Wow.
And I wonder what other foods there had heavy metals in them. And I'm thinking, okay, so you're not getting us on the endocrine disruptors. You're not getting us on the chemical pesticides. So then you're just going to poison us with heavy metals?
Right.
I mean, it's like we keep trying to get away from what they're doing, but they're always one step ahead with trying to poison us. So my whole thing is this is, I think the real solution is we need to back away from the big corporations and from big agra, and we need to start diversifying and starting with more like bring back the small farms, bring back the homesteads. People should work in their communities to source their food and really educate each other on how certain pesticides or chemicals can harm your body. You know, there's a lot of people that just don't know. Like, they'll go use buckets of Roundup, you know, when they're out there in their landscaping, and then they don't realize, you know, they're actually putting their bodies at risk for later on developing other types of cancers, right?
Oh yeah.
There's been lawsuits where, I mean, you see the commercials now where it's like, have you or a loved one used Roundup and then came up with cancer, right?
Right.
But see, they don't tell you that up front. Even with the makeup that women are wearing, they're chemically killing us with the makeup. Their most makeup out there has talc in it, which is baby powder, essentially, right? Remember the talcum
powder, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Talcum, how these women were coming and getting ovarian cancers and different kinds of cancers from using baby powder. Well, most of those makeups and those powders have talcum in it, or they'll have lead, or they'll have other crazy chemicals in it. So you need to be careful about what you're putting on your body. It's really bad. I mean, so pollution's a main issue. And if we're polluting the food, if we're polluting all those things and we're putting it on our skin, our body, we're putting it down into the water system. People are taking tons of crazy pharmaceutical drugs and peeing it in the, I mean, the whole thing is just,
right.
The whole planet is becoming very polluted. So, I mean, I agree with you on that as far as climate goes. Pollution is a serious issue. But see, we have to be careful when they talk about climate because they want to ignore all of that because that's part of the eugenic plan. They only want to talk about cow farts so they can limit our steak and force us to eat bugs. They only want to talk about methane or different types of gases so they can try to get rid of all the fossil fuels and force us back into the Stone Ages, you know, and they can have electricity power tech, but we have to be in the Stone Ages because right now our society, we are at a pivotal point. Our society has advanced technologically enough, and we have the internet where people can share ideas, right, for probably not too much longer if they have their way with it. But right now, we're at a time period we can share ideas. We can share technology thoughts, right?
Right, through the censorship, but yes.
Right. Like, there was this young kid on TikTok who literally was building massive Tesla coils and energy conductors in his backyard.
Oh, wow.
I kid you not. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. And they banned him, of course, after not too long, but...
Unbelievable.
What's happening is too many people are getting their hands on information and technology, and like as a society, we're going to get past the point of no return where the elites have a hard time controlling us and keeping this technology that's in the museum of technology, things that will never be, right?
Right.
They're trying to, what happens when all the people start having videos going viral of all this new technology and these things, and the population's going to want that. And they're going to be like, why can't we have that instead of this? We can have free energy. Why do we have to pay for energy? We can get it free.
Exactly.
And the problem is they don't want us to get to that point. So they got to start shutting it down and putting us back into, you know, living in a more modest way. And,
right.
You know, kind of put us back to the Stone Ages in a lot of ways so that they can reel it all back in, because they have to control us, and they control us through resources, and energy is a big key one. So
do you, wow, that's really true. And that decentralization thing is what's necessary, especially around food. I mean, you can't get closer to survival than food. You know, it's so essential. For them to just go in with this takeover is absurd. And you have countries that used to be 100% self-sufficient, like, you know, Haiti and other places, and they import all their food, which is absurd. One of the things I want to ask you, and it relates to all this, is, you know, we're hearing so much about biometrics, et cetera, and the way that they're integrating this into the human being and making us cyborgs and AI and stuff. Part of that is the central bank digital currency, which we're hearing all these announcements about. And Powell came out and made some comments about it and said, well, the CBDC that we put out next year is not going to have an anonymity, which means we'll know when you go in, what you're buying, how much money you have, and who it goes to, and all the rest. So that's the end of money anonymity. How dangerous is this system that's coming in with the CBDC? And have they tricked us by allowing us to develop things like Bitcoin and stuff to get used to that system? And then here comes the CBDC to kind of, you know, centralize all that, get rid of the Bitcoin thing, the tests are over, and now you have one world currency and it's just digital.
Yeah, they definitely are trying to move us on to a one world currency, a digital currency where everything's tracked and monitored, where, I mean, they could shut off your card at any moment, or they could limit you from just buying certain things at any moment. They've been talking a lot about creating, which I know the Biden administration has already started on, they've already made a rule where they're making the federal companies, essentially, have to comply and have to start moving towards having a carbon footprint tracker. So many people don't know that the U.S. government is actually one of the largest employers. Okay. And it's a very, like, basically a lot of people work for the U.S. government. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people. And they, I mean, even more now after they just are going to hire 87,000 new IRS agents, but lot of people work for the U.S. government. And so what they're doing is all those governmental agencies are now having to comply with this new system because Biden did an executive order where they're having to start tracking their carbon footprint. And that means essentially kind of migrating onto the ESG system where they are literally going to be calculating their carbon footprint down to each employee's travel and commute back and forth to work, right? So they're going to be finding out where each of their employees live, for example, and tracking this person goes to and from work every day. What emissions, what carbon footprint is our company generating, along with all the other things, waste and whatnot, that they're creating. And they all have to be compliant with this. And that also means being compliant with some of the social governance type key aspects, like making sure there's equity and making sure that that there's diversity and no one's being discriminated against for being a trans, or making sure pronouns are being used that they want, right? So the whole thing with they're implementing it on a federal level right now. They don't necessarily have laws or regulations yet to try to force private companies and businesses to do that. But the way they're trying to do that to private corporations and businesses is through ESG. And that's something they're really pushing toward. And the banking system is going to play a large role in that, where they're essentially processors, Visa, MasterCard, all that banking apparatus is going to be really pressuring corporations to be in line with ESG. And ESG, if you don't know, that's environmental social governance system. Mm-hmm. So they have to have certain environmentalist aspects of their company, like I said, their carbon credits, tracking their carbon footprint, making sure they're not polluting the environment or doing anything that these environmental police or whatever would flag. And a lot of the problem with the ESG system is that it's going to be based on opinion. So you're going to have these like ESG officials going into corporations and businesses and writing what they think your ESG rating is. And
right. So,
I mean, they've done studies where someone goes in and three different people went in and rated Tesla on the ESG ratings, and his ratings varied from like five stars to one star, you know, depending on the person.
Right.
So, to me, it just seems like it's going to be abused. It's going to be a racket. It's just going to be a way to try to stifle the economy, slow down growth. You're going to have a lot of companies struggling to be in line with that. And I think it's just going to amount to really...
It's more centralization, right?
More centralization, but also like imagine this. Not only are they going to be pressuring corporations to be in league and in line with the ESG system, they're going to be pressuring people and individuals as well. And they've already been developing carbon footprint tracking apps and other things along that line for people so that people can track their carbon footprint. And it's not even going to be that, but they'll be tracking your carbon footprint because there's so much surveillance on your phones, on your devices. Your every single purchase that you make is tracked and monitored. Like when you swipe your card at the store, Visa or MasterCard or Discover, they are actually getting that data and they actually use it for whatever they want to use it for. And so they are completely on board with the ESG system, mm-hmm. those companies. And so what it might end up being is you swipe at the gas pump and they say, sorry, you're over your carbon footprint for the month. You cannot make this purchase. I mean, it's going to get to that point. Or you swipe for buying certain items at the store. Sorry, you're over your carbon footprint. And what people are going to be able to do is they're actually going to be able to sell their carbon credits.
Oh, wow.
You could actually make a little bit of money. The poor people out there will be like, oh, let me sell my carbon credits to somebody like Leonardo DiCaprio, who's rich, so he can ride around on his private jet.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at with this new system. And recently, Visa, MasterCard, Discover all kind of announced that they're in league also with creating separate registrations and ratings for purchases that have to do with gun sales. So, I mean, we don't know how much longer people are even going to be able to buy guns with these cards. And the reason why they want to kind of get us off from cash is they want us also used to having this luxury of just using a card and using electronic payments that we then kind of phase out cash before we realize how much we wish we had it back. Right.
Yes.
And so that's the danger of ever just becoming dependent on any type of a digital currency. All those are tracked. They could shut you down from accessing at any time. And it won't be the bank. It'll be the processors. It'll be, like I said, Visa saying, sorry, we will not process that for you.
Amazing.
They will say, sorry, there's nothing we could do. Right?
Right.
People will say, sorry, we have limits now that you can only take so much money out in one day. Or whatever.
Give me that. That's fascinating. And I agree with you 100%. That's exactly where it's headed. You know, if they don't want you to have pizza or fill up your gas tank, you won't have pizza or fill up your gas tank. But how does that relate to what they've done in China with the social credit score and what they're trying to bring over here? That's also related to it, because if your rating goes down, your ability to buy things goes down.
It's all intermeshed. So you would have several things, kind of like you'd still have your credit scores, like with FICO and whatever else, right? You just have another thing, like what's my ESG rating, and the companies are gonna be looking at that. What's my social credit score rating? What's my carbon footprint at? I mean, people are just gonna be monitoring these things to make sure that they're not being denied loans because they have a bad ESG rating. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I don't want to get denied a mortgage, or I don't want to get denied a car loan because I have a bad carbon footprint ESG rating.
Oh, wow.
Okay, that's where it's going. So we have some serious problems on our hand. I mean, this is where they want to take it, and this is where it's going to go if we don't stop them from doing that. And this is large in part, I'm telling you right now, Daniel, this is large in part why we have created QUX, right? Which
right.
We talked to you many times about, because
yeah,
we've like figured out this.
How is that going?
It's actually going really good. And
excellent.
We actually have we've created our token system, right? Where we literally are going to be able to have these encrypted transactions and exchanges where people can engage without being tracked, traced, any of that. Problem with Bitcoin, blockchain, all that, it's all heavily tracked, right?
Yes.
And the chain is everyone who's traded hands with that. And it's actually, they've turned it into like a currency in a way, so it's heavily regulated. With what mm-hmm. we're doing, it's not a currency, okay? So it's just a means of exchange in essence, in that it's like a way to essentially engage in private transactions, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And so
that's fantastic. And you know, when I think about it, I guess I can't let you out of this interview without asking you about Elon Musk and all the weirdness that's been going on with him. And also, you know, that's another kind of centralization coming out of Tesla, et cetera. And you know, the whole idea that the electric cars save the environment is a joke because of the amount of you know, products that are needed to make those things just completely destroy the environment anyway.
Absolutely.
But when you look, Millie, you've had a lot of experience looking out at political impact of individuals and PACs and all the rest of it. When you see someone who's consolidated as the richest man in America and in the world, this guy and his company, and the way that it's been put forward is kind of like a Howard Hughes situation. Mm-hmm. And now his impact is throughout these different conflicts. Like, you know, he shows up in the Ukraine war with Starlink, offering them free internet, you know, if the Russians take their internet out. And then recently that process got slightly reversed. And of course, there's the whole Twitter buyout thing. But the process got reversed recently when he went forward and said, you know, here's my solution to the Ukraine war, give some of the Ukraine to the Russians, etc. And then you had the Chinese media beating up on this guy, you had the Ukraine foreign ministry threatening him. You know, what do you think is going on there in relation to Musk and what they're trying to do? You know, my own sort of supposition is that they were trying to create a space president, basically. But there's something unusual with him playing in the middle of all these diplomatic pieces in a way that, say, someone like Bezos doesn't. What do you think is happening?
Right. I think that Elon Musk, he's a very wealthy man. Obviously, we know there are other billionaires out there, but why aren't they speaking out? Why aren't they doing anything, right?
Yeah.
I think it's that Elon is clearly, he's part of the establishment, but at the same time, he's like a golden boy, golden child because of all the work he's doing with Elon, with his Tesla and with SpaceX. And so they're kind of like, you know, he can get away with a little bit more, and he does in a lot of ways. But I think that, you know, what he's doing, saying, oh, split it up with, you know, Ukraine, I think that he's just trying to speak his own political mind and come up with solutions. But as far as saying, oh, hey, I'll offer you Starlink, I think that's just purely him being a businessman and thinking, hey, I could offer them a service and they'll probably want it and they'll pay it, you pay for it. I mean, I think that's just purely capitalism and him wanting to make money and profit, which nothing wrong with that. But I think that at the end of the day, yeah, it is interesting this role that Elon Musk plays. See, all along when I saw Elon wanting to purchase Twitter, everyone like initially just started palm fronting him, like especially people on the conservative right wing side. They're like, oh, Elon, wow, he's saving the day. He's going to buy Twitter and that's going to make everything better. Right. But see, I noticed the timing of it. And that's what was key is the timing. It was right when Trump was launching his Truth Social.
Yes.
So I think that it was strategic in that he could take a lot of the steam out of Truth Social. A lot of people started saying, oh, well, we don't even need Trump's Truth Social because Elon Musk is just going to give us all our freedom back on Twitter. All the while, people were still being banned. They were still being censored. So in such a time when it would have been seen economically and strategically from like a business perspective as a very beneficial time for Truth Social, here Truth Social was having to deal with Elon Musk now coming in and saying, I'm going to save the day. But that will be months out. That will be months out, right? And then at the last minute, you know, he backs out of the deal. But at the same time, he backed out of the deal for valid reasons. He backed out of the deal because of the bots. Large bot activity on Twitter. Why? Because that's what's going on with social media. Anyone can create these accounts. So what happens is you have the way social media was created, it was created to be used for IOs, for intelligence operations, for psychological warfare operations. Anyone can go on there and create an account, which allows for them to create bot farms. They have these bot farms. They can essentially target individuals and dogpile them to sway political opinion, make stuff trend. Half the stuff you see trending on Twitter is artificial because you've got all you have to do is get a bunch of bots to go start tweeting with the same word in it and mm-hmm. it boosts it to the top. So, of course, Twitter has a bunch of bots on Twitter because, you know, it's just the name of the game. And so even if Twitter wants to purge these bots and if they didn't want them there, they wouldn't be able to do much about it. They'd be continually having to purge the bots because the way their system was set up, it didn't allow for any barriers to prevent the bot activity, if that makes any sense. So I think the problem that Elon Musk was seeing is, and I think it's not just with Twitter, you know, when you have somebody wanting to invest in something, you want to see real organic activity and you want to think that a lot of that you're seeing is organic activity. When you see that a lot of it's actually inorganic, well, that actually cuts down your ability to monetize with advertisements. And so you have advertisements seeing that, oh, a lot of these views are not actually real views or they're inorganic views. Are they essentially getting, you know, gypped or are they getting ripped off? Right. So that's a problem. And I do find it interesting, though, you know, around that time period, I was really talking a lot on social media and I put out a video on a QUX about how QUX is a bot-free zone. And literally the way the system is set up, it's impossible for there to be bots inside QUX. And really pushing heavily on, look, they got to rise above having the bots, okay? Because I don't think many people like having bots. Like, even when you see them in the chats, it's usually them saying derogatory things, disgusting things. I mean, just really annoying and aggravating people in chat in the chats anyway. I know I get a lot of my people complaining oftentimes on my YouTube channel to be like, moderate the bots out of here better. Right. You know, like people complain to me, I'm like, oh, okay, it's my channel, I probably should. But, you know, people don't like to deal with bots. And it's even worse when you realize that you have the military industrial complex literally with basement dwelling think tanks, people running these common operational pictures and dashboards where they literally are managing a whole farm of bots to attack people. Break people down psychologically. That's when that, okay, that's a problem, right? So I don't blame Musk for wanting to back out, but I also think that there's no way he didn't know. Come on. There's no way he didn't know, but that's a good excuse to back out at that time period.
They're resolving everything supposedly this week, and he's going to take over. That's where it's at, supposedly. It is a weird case. There's no question about it. Other wild card, the UFO file, which, you know, I love to cover. And you were nice enough to share some of your very interesting stories around that last time. What I want to ask you is, when you see the media and the government promoting the UFO file aspect, how does that sit with you as someone who knows how much the media is manipulated? Because we know if they didn't want the UFO thing getting out, it wouldn't, like it didn't for 70 years. Where are we with their manipulation on the UFO file and just, you know, having like Marco Rubio and, you know, people as different as Kirsten Gillibrand now heading up the U.S. government UFO office and things of this nature? Does that make you uneasy at all?
I mean, I've heard about like Project Bluebeam and all these other things where, you know, they could try to fake something and into their agenda. I think that would be hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, what I will say pertaining to UFOs or UFO file, one thing I have found bizarre in my career in journalism, I've met a lot of influenceable, like I've met a lot of people who are high up either in intelligence or just positions of status. Okay. Like high up people. And what I have noticed is like, all of them are like, when you talk about the whole alien subject, they all seem to have some kind of story. And, you know, when you hear people who are reputable journalists working for, you know, big name media companies, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, there's UFO technology on this Air Force base or on this, you know, when you hear that, and it's like, okay, well, this is not just some tinfoil hat person sitting in a camper somewhere saying these things, they saw a sparkly thing in the sky.
Yeah.
These are like people high up in intelligence that are saying these things. So what I will say is there's definitely something to it. There's definitely something there. What exactly it is, that's another story, right? I mean, but when you hear all that talk, you can't deny that that there's definitely something going on, if that makes sense.
Well, that's really interesting. If you could ask your source who gave you that information around Space Force being part of the Mar-a-Lago trove of documents, I'd be curious, since that person's aware of aerospace, if they think there's anything relating to the UFO file in those documents, because
space program stuff. This person worked on Ronald Reagan's like Star Wars program, the Stargate program, those type of things. And I mean, I could try to ask those questions for you if you want. I don't know what the person's going to come back with, but
Well, that's a very interesting key period the SDI Star Wars piece. So I'd be curious to see what they think in relation to that. I instantly thought Space Force when they raided Mar-a-Lago.
I don't know. I mean, it definitely had Space Force or Space Program. It was like, this definitely had something to do with that. Also, there was some kind of talk about, I kid you not, like some kind of thing pertaining to nukes or nuclear codes. And like code word term for like a biscuit or something. I have no idea. It was like, okay, apparently they use different codes or terms for things, but yeah, it had something to do with the, they said nuke codes or something to do with that as well. So,
right.
But we don't know how many different documents there were. I mean, I don't know.
Well, when you hear that they searched Melania's wardrobe, obviously that's a very unusual process, you know, and they're thinking whatever it is so confidential that they grabbed his napkins. So
from what I heard, the safe was empty.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yes.
So what I also find interesting is, now I had also heard, now this is a different source. I had also heard from a different source that the tip off, because remember it was a source close that tipped off, right?
Yes.
That might have actually been an operation, essentially, to get them to jump the gun and fall kind of flat, which would kind of, I mean, I think if that was the case, that was genius, because if they're sitting here with their empty hands and they're like, oh, we can't make a charge on the raid we just did, and we spent hours and hours all day long searching for things and we don't really have enough to go on for anything, then, and all we have are these classified documents that he already declassified.
So you think it's a false lead?
They have a problem.
Yeah.
And it also becomes harder to then just subsequently do an indictment. But who knows? I mean, who knows what's going on?
Well, when you think about,
I hear all these things from very, you know, credible intelligent sources, but at the end of the day, I think a lot of times things are so compartmentalized, you don't know what's really going on.
Yeah, absolutely. What we do know is that they risked raiding an ex-president and setting a precedent for going after former presidents, which is kind of remarkable to do this. As I said, it's never been done in history before. So for me, the reasons would be on the level of what you're talking about. It's either a nuclear thing or it's related to something like the UFO file, which is so deep in the wall of secrecy that they would have to perform an extraordinary action. And they could have been lured in there. I think that's an interesting bit of information, because they could have been lured in there and created this whole scenario and overplayed their hand just to fall flat. It's possible. And it's weird. I've tried to sort that out. You have some guys out there like Robert Barnes, you know, doing his law thing and saying, well, they totally don't have a case. And then you have a guy like Napolitano who knows Trump. And, you know, he's had a kind of an up and down relationship with him, but he says that the legal team behind Trump, you know, needs to get on this and really defend him because he's in a lot of hot water. So it's hard to say. Somewhere the truth is somewhere in the middle. But what we know is it's so extraordinary for them to go and raid a president. It just doesn't happen, even under extraordinary circumstances.
I would say it's not somewhere in the middle, because, like I said, I talk directly with Trump's people. Okay. Mm-hmm. And from what I've heard, it's not a question of indictment. It's a question of when.
Wow.
So, and not because, like I said, I don't think it's necessarily that they don't have a case. Yes, Robert Barnes is correct in that they don't have a case. But like I said, they don't need a case.
Right.
They just need an indictment. And that's, like, anyone can indict, they can indict a ham sandwich. Like, that is the saying, okay? You can indict a ham sandwich. You don't have to prove someone's guilt to get an indictment. It just has to be some kind of like a reason to believe or something very loose in general to get that indictment. And you don't actually have to present any evidence or any thing you have that would support that person's innocence or defense. So it's an indictment, when they submit paperwork for an indictment, it's completely one-sided. Mm-hmm. And it's just, we have reason to believe, or we have enough cause, and then they can get that indictment. And, you know, I saw it happened with me, right? It can happen with a lot of people. You can indict a ham sandwich. And so
that's true. You've been through it.
I've been through it.
You had your own phony raid.
Exactly. So they can get that indictment for sure. And, you know, there's a lot of paranoia, you know, about, I also think it's because I want to say something really bad, but then because it popped into mind, but then I just
go for it.
Can't talk about that yet.
Oh no.
Shoot. But pertaining to spying programs, okay. I think that the deep state might be pretty paranoid that people working alongside Trump may have information and stuff pertaining to spying programs that would incriminate, large in part, them big time. So I think that also kind of puts a fire under their behinds too, if that makes any sense.
Yes, absolutely. What do you think is the real wild card in the middle of all that? Because we've looked at it and said, well, it could be, you know, nuclear related. It could be space related. Those are pretty big wild cards, but what do you think it is?
Honestly, I've heard different things from different sources, and I don't want to make any assumptions of what I know it is or anything, but I can say I think that it's possibly something to do with the space programs. That's what I think, just based on what I've been hearing. But at the same time, I don't think it's going to be anything that juicy, mm-hmm. that like the UFO community is going, oh my gosh, look, he's got like documents with little green men on it. Like, I don't think it's anything that juicy. I think it's something going to be more along the lines of space programs, but not necessarily like, oh, look, he's got UFO documents per se, like nuke codes, space programs, you know, different things of that nature.
Secret space programs.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think something along those lines, definitely.
Incredible. Millie, it's great to see you. Absolutely fascinating. Give us like 2 minutes here about what you have coming up and what you're working on now and everything that's coming up for you here into 2023.
Right. So, like I said, I've just been doing journalism. You guys can follow me on millennialmillie.com. Yes. Also Millie Weaver on YouTube. I've really just been working a lot behind the scenes with some of the teams with, True the Vote people who, you know, they did a lot of the GPS cell phone geolocation tracking for 2,000 mules. And so we've been working on that in pertaining to the sunrise stuff that I did, you know, with Sunrise Exposed, how we went undercover and infiltrated the left-wing affinity groups, meaning BLM, Extinction Rebellion, Shutdown DC, you know, these Antifa organizations. We're trying to pinpoint who was all there on January 6th participating in those type of activities. So those are some of the things I've just been working on right now, making sure that we have that. Because like I said, I know that they're going to come after Trump, and they're going to try to indict him, and they're going to try to claim with lies that he premeditated or plotted to do January 6th, or that he, you know, that this is some grand conspiracy. That's what they're going to try to claim. And just all the evidence that I've seen is it's everything to the contrary.
there's also so much incredible FBI presence with it. It's amazing, that level of it. And I think the awareness level in the public, you know, they only see this kind of one-dimensional coverage around it, and they never get into how much the event was manipulated from the start.
Right. And the FBI doesn't want to answer to how many FBI undercovers there were there working. They don't want to, they don't want to give that number. They also don't want to acknowledge Ray Epps and what his role was. So, I mean, there's so much going on there. Okay. It's pretty bad. It's really bad, but there's so much going on there. It's so much bigger of a problem than what meets the eye. And the problem is that so many people in America, they watch the mainstream media and they just eat up the narrative talking points. And it's too hard for them to wrap their head around the concept of something being orchestrated by people in power in the government, or people, you know, working for the government, working with some of these radical groups and organizations. But this is how it works. This is how intelligence operatives, contractors working in the field, I mean, this is what they do.
Millie, are you going to do a documentary on that level of it with some of the videos that you have? Are you thinking about that?
Yes. So I've done PSYOP the Steal, which you guys can watch at millennialmillie.com. And that is really a very in-depth documentary on January 6th and the truth with January 6th. And still, I think it's one of the most in-depth documentaries out there regarding January 6th. You know, back in February 2021, I was the first person coming out talking about the FBI's involvement in January 6th and these groups. And so that at that time period was, no one was talking about that. And it was very controversial for me to have said that, yeah, there's a lot of FBI involvement. A lot of these groups, right-wing groups, have FBI handlers, or the FBI have run COINTELPRO ops on them, and they fully taken them over. And, you know, saying that in that film was a big deal. And then only later, you know, it was in the summer that Tucker Carlson and Revolver came out with that piece where they had proven that there was, you know, these certain people in FBI and their involvement. And so now that's really kind of taken off, and we know what they're up to. We know what they're doing. And we have to be careful, because they want to try to infiltrate our movements, our organizations, get people compromised, and then get those people to compromise their fellow members, or, you know, get people caught up, essentially, so that they can use these groups for their own means.
So those patriot groups, it's not a very united picture. There is a lot of fragmentation, and that's intentional, because the kind of provocateurs that get allowed in and play the groups off against each other, you start to see people and you're like, oh, you're on this conservative thing, but, you know, there's a lot of weird activities that come out in relation to what they're doing. And you say, well, that's not very consistent with what you were trying to do. So is that fracturing a big problem?
Yeah, I think that right now we're actually seeing a lot of that. And I noticed a lot of that really ramping up even after 2020, where it was just, you know, people get inside these groups. And I saw that kind of firsthand with some of the groups that were doing a lot of the investigations with the election integrity, activities and groups that were trying to get to the bottom of what happened with 2020. And just seeing how people get in there, squeeze themselves into different groups and positions, and then say, oh, don't talk to that person, they're bad. And then you have that happening on the other side. Don't talk to that person, they're bad. And so right now we have all this infighting, division. You know, I saw it really kind of originate there, but it's now like trickled down and fomented into the entire conservative grassroots movement, where so many people are infighting and pointing fingers at each other. And I think that's large in part because we realize fundamentally that there is a problem with infiltration. We realize that there are some people amongst us who are wolves in sheep's clothing, but it becomes the fog of war. And pretty soon you can't tell who's good and who's bad, and you're just confused. Yeah. And so I think that's what's happening. There's a lot of people out there that are just really confused right now, and I think that's large in part because there's a lot of intelligence assets in here stirring things up and, you know, causing the division.
Well, you have a great level of awareness yourself dealing with this, and you've been through and dealt with a lot of those players. So I think you'll have an excellent sense going forward. It's because I guess it gets intuitive after a while who's up to no good.
Yeah. And so I always tell people, like, we need to stop just, you know, relying on the person, if that makes any sense. Like, too many people start to almost become like cult followers of a particular person or whatever. And then you've got this cult versus that cult, right? And then they're just battling each other over whose person is good or bad. And it's like, okay, let's pay attention to the information, because no one is going to be right every single time, first of all. That's what I will say. No one's going to be right every single time. Every good journalist out there at one point in their life or another is probably going to have to do a retraction, okay? So let's focus on the information instead of the person. And that should be what's key here. If something's valid, look at that validity. See, when you write off an entire person because someone said they're bad, you might actually miss that some of the information that they actually put out was key, and you don't want to overlook that, and you need that to put the picture together. So if you have all these assets coming into the scene and the movement, and they're actually creating division by saying, don't talk to that person, they're bad. Don't talk to that person, they're bad, right? Don't listen to them, they're bad. What you're actually doing is you're actually compartmentalizing everything. You're sequestering information that might be key. And you're not allowing people to come together and form the big picture of what's really happening. So don't listen to people saying, oh, don't listen to them, or don't talk to them, or don't look at what they're putting out, or don't look at, because that is part of an information operation. That's part of an operation to compartmentalize and sequester the truth from you. If we want to know what everyone has to say, we want to know what everyone's information is, and then we can put the full picture together, and we can sort the wheat from the chaff. Do you understand?
Yeah. Excellent point. Right. And that's basically how to get the best type of information. And walling people off, and that censorship, it takes place in so many different places. On social media, you know, in the media and everywhere else. You don't want that kind of thing in a movement that's supposed to be all about openness. So I 100% agree with you. And I think that you have that vantage point. Again, you know, you've been through it. Quick prediction, and I'll put you on the spot politically just this one last time. 2024, who do you see facing off for president, and who would win?
Okay, so as far as people running in the Republican...
Yes.
Okay, so running against Trump, we might see DeSantis. Although, from what I've heard, some people around him, political strategists, have pretty much advised him against it, because it might end up really hurting him politically, whereas he might benefit better from just holding back in 2024.
He's young enough to wait, right?
Right. Yeah. He could wait. And he's doing such a great job in Florida, and Florida really needs him now, especially after Hurricane Ian. So I think strategically it would be smarter for DeSantis to hold back and wait for 2028 and then get Trump's endorsement. But we could see him run. We also, from what I've heard, Liz Cheney is going to try to
But that's great.
But
0.01% of the vote, right? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's not going to be pretty for her. I hope she does so bad. Just for entertainment value, you know that debate is going to be lit, okay?
You know. Maybe we could talk about some of her dad's crimes. So that's a good idea.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. Like, Trump would just smash her. Like, he would destroy her on the debate stage. So please do run, Liz Cheney. Please do, because I want to see that. I think it's going to end up being Trump, honestly, unless they can take him out. If they take him out successfully, we might see somebody else. I think that they're kind of They're keeping the Santas there on the side as a, I think, a, almost like a backup. That's what I think. I've also heard of Donald Trump Jr., people talking about that. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know.
That's interesting. Okay.
But that might be something even later down the road. And then there's who's going to run in the Biden spot, essentially.
Yes.
See, that's a tricky one, because the Democrats, I think that Joe Biden is not going to be able to live through a 2024. Like, I don't think that his health is going to allow for it.
Absolutely.
And the man is just crumbling. And I think that right now they're kind of just kid gloving him like crazy and dealing with it. And I think for them, it's a little bit of an embarrassment, because he has all these horrible gaffes, and it just allows for a lot of people to point out and laugh at him. I mean, I think for them, they're going to try to go with somebody more like Michelle Obama. I know Hillary is constantly always trying to run, which she has a lot of health problems too. And she's getting older. She is very tenacious. So I would not put it past her. Could you imagine? It's Hillary and Trump again on the debate stage. But see, I think
there's some good odds for that. Yeah.
I personally think it's going to be Michelle Obama.
Wow. Okay. Incredible.
I really do. Because then you would have the Obamas in the White House again. And pretty much the Obamas are the one pulling the strings behind Biden anyway, right now.
Absolutely. Wow. Great prediction. I'm 100% there with you. I can see it. The Obama piece with Michelle doing the book tour, and she's on stage. She has this tour booked with Oprah Winfrey going over the book. So that's perfect for reaching out and testing the waters for it. But it's going to be a wild ride in any case. No question about it.
And I think that a lot of people on the conservative right-wing side, they're going to step into it, and they're going to all say, oh, Michelle Obama's a man, right? Michelle Obama's a man, right? And Trump will probably say something along the lines, if he hasn't already, right? And I think that it's going to be a problem, because at the moment it fits them best, they'll just whip out some kind of paper or doctor's thing that says she's a genetic female, she's a woman. See. Mm-hmm. Right. They'll whip out something to prove it.
Right.
And they'll say, you guys are all just a bunch of racists for saying this. And they'll really kind of come down on the conservatives, and they'll say that it was people's attacking her because of her race or something.
So on the right, they have to make sure not to get baited, basically.
Right. I think that don't get too baited there. I know that Michelle Obama really looks a lot like a dude, and there's a lot of females out there that do. It's just how that works sometimes, you know. You genetics are weird, but I don't think that we should fall into that trap, because even if Michelle Obama is a dude, the only way you're going to be able to really prove that in an argument is if you're pull the pants down and see, right? Like, how are you gonna prove it? Okay, I know there's a lot of pictures out there, but the internet's the internet. So as far as arguments go and debate strategy goes, she can come out there and, I'm a woman, look, see, da da da, right? And as far as the Democrat base goes, I think a lot of them are gonna fully just unite around her and be like, yeah, how dare you? And, you know, I think it's going to help their cause. Honestly, I do. I think it's going to help their cause. And I think that they'll kind of position it as the big, bad, bully, mean conservatives versus us, the people who are empathetic and virtue signal. So we have to be careful that we don't kind of step into some of the traps, I would say, with that.
So your preview for 2024 is lots of race issues, lots of gender issues, lots of sort of hot flash style political figures. And
right.
But you're seeing a lot of recycled figures, Michelle Obama, Hillary. Yeah.
You know, I had actually originally heard, I think it was like 2017, 18 time period. I even did a video report on it where I was asking people, like, man on the street. But I had originally heard that it was going to be Biden, Michelle, like, so another Biden, Obama, right? But they couldn't get Michelle to run. She didn't want to at the time. And so they went with Kamala. So, I think
who's been a disaster. Yeah.
Yeah. Kamala, you know, Kamala's been pretty bad, but I think Biden's been even worse.
Yeah.
So from their standpoint, I think Biden's more of an embarrassment by far than Kamala because of the Biden family dramas, the diary, the laptop, the gaffes. It's been bad, right?
Yeah.
They're like, get this guy out of here. We need something else. And, so, yeah, they would love to play up a bunch of race issues against Trump if Trump runs in 2024. They would love to play on that division in America and talk about Charlottesville. And, you know, I think that's what they're kind of going for
2024. Do you think the economy or the border will be the issue that will take the Democrats down in 2024?
I think the economy. So what the conservative strong point is the economy – because while Trump was in office, while they had their policies in effect, the economy was doing amazingly, really as a result of those policies, large in part.
Yeah.
And as soon as Biden gets in, he shuts down the gas production largely. He shut down the North Dakota pipeline. He just immediately started making these big moves that would impact our economy. Keeping schools closed down for longer, continuing to push for these vaccine mandates. I mean, a lot of people quit and walked from their jobs. The economy was just struggling under Obama. And so all his policies have been negatively affected. And the gas is not an understatement because when you affect the gas, that trickles down and affects everything because the farmers need the gasoline to run the tractors. The semi-truck drivers need the gasoline to transport food, transport goods, services, everything along that line, those lines. Even the farmers having to pay to have the fertilizer shipped in. The fertilizer's gone up, right, because of the gas. I mean, everything has gone up exponentially because of the gas. So the economy is really suffering so hard right now because of the gas. And the Democrats' solution is just print more money. Democrat solution is let's pass more bills and spend more money. I mean, their Inflation Reduction Act should have been called the Inflation Increase Act because they were like, we're going to solve inflation by printing a ton of money, giving a lot of that money from the bill that they actually ginned up, giving a lot of that money to climate change causes. Most people don't know that that bill was actually some of the most comprehensive climate change legislation in over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually got a lot of their climate change legislation in on that bill. And so they put a bunch of that money towards climate change. And their way of getting that money back is in part of that bill. They have the 87,000 IRS agents and
unbelievable
chasing down the American people and shaking them upside down by their ankles for that money.
It's incredible. It is incredible. I absolutely agree. And so that's kind of the Brave New World place that we find ourselves in. And it seems like, you know, this is a critical point to turn things around. So that's what these two elections really are about. I mean, you know, it's more than elections. Obviously, it's people on the ground. But the elections are the reflection of a lot of that activity. And so there's a lot at stake, would you say, over the next couple of years?
There's a lot at stake. And, you know, you vote during election day, but people don't realize that every single thing they do is a vote. So,
yeah.
I mean, you go to the grocery store, the product you buy is a vote. You're voting for, if you're buying products that have poisonous chemicals in it, you're voting for those companies to continue poisoning people. If you're going to your local farmer's market, engaging with natural farmers in your area, you're promoting those small farms and businesses that are doing right by their customers to stay in business. Everything you do is a vote. The products you buy, the electronics you get, everything is a vote. It's not just election day. And I think a lot of people think, well, let's just do whatever and do whatever we want, buy whatever we want, watch whatever we want, put our kids in front of the screen, in front of whatever they want, and think that that's not going to have real life consequences and that that's going to have an impact on society as a whole in a negative way. And then we think that we're just going to magically vote on election day and that the people that are in power, who many of them are lobbied there by the big companies that we're voting for every day when we're buying their products, they keep them in power and they keep everything bad and keep everything going the same. I mean, mm-hmm. We have to actually take the initiative to change things in our small, localized way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it does move things back local. And that's where the grassroots level of things, it needs to be from the bottom up and forget about this top down activity. Exactly. 'Cause we've seen where that goes. Yeah.
Definitely vote. I'm not saying to not vote. You have to vote. That's key. But don't think that just by voting, everything's going to magically be fixed or changed, because you have to actually make those choices every day.
Yeah. And it's like we've moved into an era where all the types of things that were talked about, say, a decade ago around alternative media sources, so much of it has come to pass, and it seemed pretty far out, you know, that any of this would happen. And yet, you know, we've gone through things like lockdowns and martial law tryouts and things of this nature. And the type of degradation I think we're seeing around the society as well. So we know that we're definitely in it. And so that's why we count so much on people like you who can really bring the truth out on these things. And you've put yourself on the line to do this a lot too. So we really appreciate it. Millie, incredible, phenomenal work. And we continue to follow you and really are looking forward to everything that you're putting out. We'll keep our eye out for QUX as well, and people learn more about it and the whole network of activities. I know there's a lot there. How do people find out more about that? Is it QUX.com?
It's QUX.tv. That's where you
okay, can dot TV. Right.
And thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure coming on your show. I've told you this before, but I'm going to tell you again, you're a great interviewer. So thank you so much for having me on.
It's fantastic with you. I just can't, you know, get enough of all the things you're talking about. And you really have that well-rounded view of these things. And right now that's critical, because I think a lot of people coming into it don't have the background on it. And so it seems just like, what's going on here? But you have a great way of mapping and connecting those dots. And you know, the millennial part of that, millennial Millie, it's interesting, because on the millennials, there's a great deficit on this kind of information. So you're really fulfilling something there, which is a great gap.
Yeah, millennials generationally were heavily targeted. I mean, they were targeted to be the replacement for the boomers, to continue on with, you know, this agenda. They were stifled right out of the gate. Most millennials are not even able to own homes because they've been so economically stifled. And that was intentional to get them to loathe capitalism and to want communism. So generationally, millennials were targeted heavily with programming. It's kind of those things where I understand where millennials are coming from, because I was born in that generation. I've mm-hmm. been through what they've been through. I've seen what they've seen for the most part. So I understand that knee jerk to want to throw out the whole thing and something else, right? I understand it, because that is what the millennials were programmed to think like. Mm-hmm. But see, once you realize that the whole thing is a trap, that the whole thing was, they did this on purpose, intentionally, to destroy America, and that, you know, generations before you had it really good, and the American dream was completely feasible and possible if it had not been for some of these establishment powers, forces that literally wanted to destroy it. They wanted to create communism. It's the Hegelian dialectic, problem, reaction, solution. They wanted you to go that route. So I think that's kind of the issue in having to try to break through to most millennials and then tell them that while they're all kind of suffering economically. That's even harder, right? And then we have this horrible failing economy, which Biden and them are creating, right? Which is only going to create more people wanting to be dependent on social services, dependent on the state, wanting UBI, wanting those handouts. And they're crippling us all. And it's intentional because they want people to be dependent on the government. So it's you have to break through from all of that conditioning to the millennials, which is a challenge to do. So I'm up for a challenge, and that's what I've been trying to do. So you guys can find out more about it at millenniummillie.com.
That's it. That's the one. Yeah, and you're doing it quite well. Millie, we'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Daniel.
All right. Bye-bye. Millie, just incredible information. Of course, you can find Millennial Millie right here on YouTube. Please remember to visit darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter to get episodes delivered right in your inbox. Join us on Friday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern for the X series. See you soon.